Shalom to all. Today's daf is Bava Metzia daf Lamed Hey. We are starting about the second line with the words Amar Rava. And today's daf is sponsored Lilu Nishmas Mars Mirim Sara Basar Yaakov Moshe Her Neshama Shadav and Aliyah Elilu Nishmas Mars Freida Chayubela Basar Yitzchak Tzvi Her Neshama Shadav and Aliyah. And in honor of the yahrzeit of Reb David Tzvi ben Reb Yosef Yehuda, his Neshama Shadav and Aliyah, and he should be Melech Tzeisher for his family and all of Klal Yisrael. Now we ended off with a cliffhanger of a question, so pay attention to the introduction so we could be right up to par for the answer. Rav Hunet stated that the Shem of Aram Mishnah who had paid instead of swearing and pottering himself still has to make a shvua she'ena b'shusai that he doesn't have the item. And this is because we're afraid that the item wasn't stolen as the Shomer claimed, and really he kept it for himself, rationalizing that it's okay because he's paying for it, and therefore the shvua will prevent him from doing this. Now, we had asked from a Mishnah, which I taught that Reuven lent Shimon money and received a mashkein and then lost the mashkein. And in this Mishnah, there were four variations of what the claim and counterclaim was. So for now, we're going to be focusing on the second scenario, where Reuven claimed that the mashkein was only half the value of the loan, so Shimon still owes him the other half, whereas Shimon's counterclaim was that the mashkein's value was 3/4 of the loan. And the Mishnah told us that since Shimon is Maidim Mikzas, he has to make a shvua how much it was really worth, and then he pays the remainder. However, the Mishnah concluded that since we're chayshish that maybe the lender, Reuven, is lying and actually has the mashkein, he's going to pull it out after Shimon swears, proving that Shimon lied, possibly him as an aid. And therefore, in this situation, Reuven's actually going to be making the shvua and not Shimon. Now here's a question. If we follow Rav Huna, that the Shomer, the one who's watching the item, in this case it's Reuven, the lender, has to swear a shvua she'ena b'shusai, so we have no chashash over here. Reuven makes a shvua she'ena b'shusai that he doesn't have the mashkein, and now Shimon can swear how much it's worth without the fear that Reuven's going to pull it out of his pocket, proving Shimon to be a liar. And since we didn't say that in the Mishnah, it seems like we don't call it Rav Huna. As we here have a number of answers, the Gemara begins, Amar Rava, according to some Gersas, it's Amar Rabba, Shiesh Edim Shenesarfa. We're talking about a case where Reuven has Edim that the item got burnt, and therefore Reuven's not making a shvua because he has Edim. Ask the Gemara, Yehachi if that's so, Mehechamai Sila. So where's he going to bring the item from? If we have Edim proving that it was burnt, so then we still have no chashash that Reuven's going to pull the item out, showing that Shimon's a liar. So Alam Rav Yosef Yisrael says differently, Shesh Edim Shenegneva, we have Edim that it was stolen, and so the item still exists. However, the Gemara asks, so if Seif had at the end of the day, Meicha Maisila, where's the Mav going to get the Mashkin from to show that Shimon's wrong? And the answer to that is the Tarchu Maisila, he's going to work really hard and find who stole it or find where this item is to bring it and prove that Shimon's wrong. Ask the Gemara, Yachi, if so, well, Kimishtaba Malva Nami, even in the situation where the Malva has to swear, Lichach Levelesi, the Leif is going to work really hard to find the item that was stolen, and he's going to prove that the Malva's a liar. And the answer is that it's not so, because Bishlay Malva, Yadaman Ka'al, the Malva knows who's going in and out of his house. He could check the video cameras, and then he could go and work hard and find the item that was stolen and bring it to prove that the Leiva is a liar. Does the Leiva know who's going in and out of the Malva's house to track down the Ganiv to prove that the Malva's a liar? He obviously doesn't know who's going in and out of the Malva's house. And therefore, our only chashash is that the Leiva is going to swear and the Malva is going to track down the Ganiv to prove that the Leiva is a liar, but not vice versa. Abai Amar, he gives a different answer. Gezeira, the whole reason why Reuven has to make the Shavua, not Shimon, is because of Gzeira. Shem Yitain V'yomer Loi, perhaps Reuven's going to tell Shimon, Achar Shvua Mitzasiya, I found it after I made the Shvua. When I made the Shvua, I didn't know where the item was, but I found it afterwards. And therefore, even if Reuven does make the Shvua Rav Huna, he still would be able to prove Shimon to be a liar. And so that's why we just say that all Shvuas are on Reuven. Now, Rashi Amar Rashi gives an answer which gives a totally different explanation to this Mishnah that we quoted. Zenishba V'zenishba. Both of them swear. Both Reuven and Shimon have to swear. Zenishba Shane Rishusai. Reuven swears that he doesn't have the Mashkan, it's not in his Rishos. V'zenishba Kamahaya Shavet. And Shimon swears how much it was worth, which is what we were suggesting all along, and this is going along with Ravuna's opinion. And Vachik Amar, this is what the Mishnah is saying, Mi Nishbatchila, who has to swear first? Malva Nishbatchila, the Malva swears first, because Shema Yishba Zeviya Tzialos HaPikadayin, perhaps this other one, Shimon's going to swear first, and then Reuven's going to take out the Pikadayin, showing how Shimon's a liar, and that's why we say that Reuven first has to swear, and then Shimon has to swear, and really our Mishnah fits with Ravuna. Now we just continue discussing one of the cases in this Mishnah, Ravuna Bar Tachlifa Mishmei the Rava Amar, he says, Reisha the Seifa Tiyofta the Ravuna, and the Reisha of the Seifa, which is the third scenario in the Mishnah, that's what you have done on Rav Huna. What was that case? Selhiv l'sani olav, shtaim hayashave. The Leiva told the Malve that you lent me a selah for my mashkein, but the mashkein was worth 2 slime. Bala Eimer, the other one, Reuven says, likey, that's not so. El selah v'sicha olav, I lent you a selah for your mashkein, but selah hayashave. Your mashkein was worth only 1 selah, it wasn't worth 2 slime, so I don't owe you anything. And the Mishnah said, Pater, Reuven soli Pater. Now here's the question, Vim isol Rav Huna, if we hold Rav Huna, that the Shimer, in this case, which is Reuven, has to make a shvua that he doesn't have the item, well, migu de mishtaba Malve shein reshusai, since the Malve anyway has to make a shvua that he doesn't have it in his rishos, we should make him swear Gilgul Shvua will be able to roll another shvua onto him how much the item was worth. And even though he was kaifra akol and he said it was worth the amount of the loan, since anyway according to Rav Huna he would have to make a shvua, so we could force him to make another shvua. And since we don't say that, it must be we don't call it Rav Huna. Amar Rashi, Rashi says Amrisa l'shmaitza k'meid Rav Kahana. I suggested this in front of Kahana of Amrlin. He told me tehe b'maminoi. Then no, he retains his trust, which means the Leiva trusts the Malva and says forget about about it. You don't have to swear to me. I trust you that the mashkan was lost or was stolen and that you don't actually have it. Ask the Gemara if that's really so. So v'nemnei loiva l'malva nami b'ha kama havishava. So it wasn't the loiva trust the malva how much it was worth. In the fourth case of the Mishnah, the loiva claimed that the mashkan was worth double the loan, and the malva said no, it was only worth 1.25 times the amount of the loan. I require the malva to make a shvu over there. Well, if we're saying the loiva trusts the malva that he doesn't have to make a shvu, sheina b'shusai, so why not trust him how much the item was worth? And the answer to that is like him lebegave. The malva is not an expert; he doesn't know how much it is. It was just given to him as a collateral for the loan, but he doesn't really know its value. So that's why the loiva doesn't trust the malva. Ask the Gemara. So what about the other way around? When how many malva loiva the kim lebegave? Why doesn't the malva trust the loiva how much it's worth? Because the loiva knows its value; it's his item. Why not say that? And the answer is like mehamin le. The malva doesn't trust him. And the follow-up question obviously is umay shno loiva the mehamin le malva umay shno malva the loiva mehamin le loiva. So why is it that we're saying that the loiva trusts the malva, but the malva doesn't trust the loiva? And the answer is loiva mekayim beba malva tumas sharm tanchem. The loiva establishes the following pasuk in the malva, meaning he applies the following pasuk to the malva. And tumas sharm tanchem literally means the perfection of the upright will lead them to good things. Whereas malva mekayim beba loiva, the malva applies the following thing to the loiva: v'selv b'gdim yishadim, the twisted acts of traitors will rob them. In other words, usually wealthy people are trusted because if they have wealth and they have money, so people tend to trust them. Whereas the other way around is true as well. Poor people, since they don't have money and often have to go around borrowing it, are often not trusted and they're looked at as people that you have to be wary of. Even though it's not necessarily true, that's just the way of the world. And therefore, the loiva tends to trust the malva because he's the one that has the money and lent it to him, whereas the malva tends not to trust the loiva. I will continue with another case. There was a fellow who deposited earrings by his friend. And then Amrle, he told him, Havli Kefe, give me my earrings. And Amrle, the Shemer, told him, I don't know where I put them. I'm really sorry. I lost them. So also Rav Nachman, we can't Rav Nachman. Amrle, Rav Nachman told him, Kol lo yadana pshusahi. Anyone that says, I don't know, that's a pshia. That means that he's negligent. Zil shlim. Mr. Shimer, you have to pay him. But lo shilim, he didn't pay. So also Rav Nachman, agve la padne mine. Rav Nachman went and took away his mansion from him. L'soif, at the end, ishtakach kefe. The earrings were found. They were in his jacket pocket the whole time. And what happened? V'aikur. They had went up in value. So Rav Nachman says, Hadri kefe l'marayu, v'hadri apadne l'maro. The earrings go back to their original owner, and the mansion gets returned to the Shimer. Number of Rava said, Rav Nachman. I was sitting in front of Rav Nachman, Uprikin Mafkin Hava, and we're learning Hamafkin, which is this parak that we're learning right now. Va'amrile, and asked Rav Nachman, what about our Mishnah, Shilim Rasli Shava? And that's his case right here. The Shimer could have sworn, he could have said that they were lost or stolen, and since he was a Shimer Chinom, he would have been totally putter, but instead he paid. And what do we say in our Mishnah? That Shilim Rasli Shava, when the Ganav is found, the Shimer gets to keep the Kefel, which in other words means that he acquires the object when he pays for it, since he didn't swear and putter himself. So it should be the same situation over here. Rava asked Rav Nachman, and even though the earrings were found, the Shimer should be allowed to keep them, and he shouldn't have to return them to the owner. And the reason why he would want to keep them is because they went up in value. So again, that's like the kefil of our Mishnah. And Rav continues saying, V'loya hadrali, but Rav Nachman didn't respond to me, didn't answer my question. It's actually good that he didn't answer me. My time, but why is that? Because there's a difference between our Mishnah in this case. Hasam over there in our Mishnah, he didn't schlep him to Bezdin. The Shimer on his own said, you know what, I'm going to pay for it. And therefore the owner says, okay, I'll be making the kefil to you. But Hach over here, Achkele Beidino, he had to schlep him to Bezdin to get the money from him, and therefore he's not making the earrings to him when they're found. Ask the Gemara, does that mean that Rav Nachman is one of the opinions that holds Shuma as Hadar? And remember, we had this earlier on in the first parak. Shuma is when property is evaluated and it's taken away from the loiva and given to the malva because of his loan. And Hadar means that it has to be returned. That if the loiva ends up getting the money, he could go to the malva, pay him off with cash, and then get his property back. So it seems to be from here that Rav Nachman holds that Shuma is Hadar. Even though the fellow collected a mansion for his earrings, since the earrings were found, the Shamer could give the earrings back and get his mansion back. So the Gemara says, no, it's not a rider Rav Nachman holds that, because Shani Hasma case is different. The whole evaluation of the mansion being taken away for the earrings was a mistake. Because those earrings were always there. As we said, they were in the guy's jacket pocket the whole time. So that's not a classic case of Shuma Hadar. And now we're going to be talking about the Shuma Hadar case. Amri Nardar, the Chum Nardar said, Shuma Hadar, Atres Yarchishasa. The Shuma has to be returned if the loiva comes up with the money for a total of 12 months. Whereas Bamra Meimar said, I'm from Nardar, Usfir Ali, and I hold Shuma Hadar L'Olam, that the Shuma always has to be returned. Which means, even if 10 years after the loan, the borrower finally comes up with the money, he can go to the lender and get his property back, paying him off with the money. The Hilchson Halacha is Shuma Hadar L'Olam, Shuma is always returned. Mishum Shenemar, because the pasuk says, Vasisa Yashav Ratoiv, and you shall do what's straight and good. And that's because, as we explained previously, even though halachically it doesn't have to be returned, the lender already collected his loan by taking away this property. property, still it's straight and honest to return it. Now we continue talking about the Shuma. Pshita, it's obvious that Shamu Leil Baal Chayiv, if they evaluated for a Baal Chayiv, Va'azal Ihu, V'Shamu Leil Baal Chayiv Didei, and he went and gave it to his Baal Chayiv. In other words, Reuven owed Shimon money and Shimon owed Levi. So a property was taken from Reuven and given to Shimon, and Shimon took that property and gave it to Levi. And then Reuven comes up with the money, so he wants to go to Levi to get his property back. So Amrina Levi, we tell him, meaning we tell Levi, the guy who currently has the property, you're not any better than the guy whom you came from. And the same way that if Reuven would have gone to Shimon, he would have gotten his property back. So since you're coming Mikaych Shimon, Reuven's allowed to go to you, Levi, and take the property away from you. Now what about the following? Zavna, let's say Shimon had sold the property, Urta, he gave it as Yerusha, V'yav Matana, or he gave it over to somebody as a present. Vadehani Meikara, Dait Da'ar Nachos. For sure, these people that either bought or got as a gift, and their intention when they went into the land is for the land itself, V'lava Dait Da'zuzi Nachos, and they have no intention of getting money for the land. And therefore, in this case, the borrower would not be able to come to them with money and take the land away. Another set of cases, Shamul al Isha, let's say they evaluated a property for a woman, meaning she had lent money to Reuven, for example, and Reuven didn't pay her back, so Bezin took away a property from Reuven and gave it to the woman. Vin Siba, then she got married to Shimon, Ay Shamu Mina de Isha, Vin Siba, or they took a property away from a woman and then she got married to somebody else, Umesa, then she died. So Baal Benechse Ishtar like Keachava, a husband in regards to his wife's properties, it's like he bought them from her, and Loi Mahader of Loi Madrina Le, he doesn't have to return the property and it's not going to be returned to him. In the first case where the woman collected property for a debt and then she got married, so it's like her husband is buying this property from her, even though it's not 100% his, but it becomes 100% his after she dies, so he's considered like a lekeach, and the borrower doesn't have the right to come to the husband with money and say, give me my property back. And it's the same the other way around. If a property got taken away from her because of money that she owed, then she got married, and then she died, her husband's not able to take money and go to the fellow who took the property away to try to get it back from him because he doesn't have that schus. Now, where do we get this from? Darmav Yosef Rechanina, he said, Be'usha Eskinu, in Usha, which is where the Sanhedrin was, they were metakin, that Isha Machar B'nechse Lug B'chai Baila, if a woman sells or nechse Mulug, her property that she owns, that the husband has rights to, and she sold it while her husband was alive, Umesa, and then she dies, Habal Ma'isim Ya'al Kuchas, the husband can take them away from the people who bought them because he's considered like a Lekeach first. When he marries her, it's as if he's buying that property from her, and again, he doesn't have full rights to it, but he's still considered like a Lekeach to the extent that when she dies, he could take the property away from the Lekuchas. On top, another question, what about if he himself gave it because of the debt? So in this case, we have classic that Reuven owes Shimon money, and instead of them going to Bezin and Bezin taking away a property from Reuven and giving it to Shimon, Reuven just decided on his own, here Shimon, I owe you the money, I don't have the money, here take one of my properties. And then Reuven comes up with the money, is he able to go to Shimon and take it back and just give him the money? So Pligibar Ravach Ravina, Ravach Ravina argue about this. Chah number one of them says, Hadra, it does go back when he comes up with the money. Chah number the other one says, Loi Hadra, it doesn't have to be given back, even though he came up with the money. Mand Amar Loi Hadra, the one that says that it doesn't have to be returned, the suffer he holds, Ha'ez Vina Ma'aliyahi. This is like a regular sale. Tell me that, Nafshe Agbe, that's because he did it on his own. Reuven on his own, without being told by anybody, said, Shimon, here, take this property. So that's like a sale, and therefore he doesn't get it back. And Mand Amar Hadra, the one that says that it does go back, the suffer he holds, Loi Zvina Ma'aliyahu, that's not considered a sale. V'had Agbe Midaite, and the only reason why he gave it on his own accord, Loi Asa Ladina, and he didn't go to Bezdin, Machmas Kisufu Huda Agbe. He did because he was embarrassed. He didn't want to have to go to Bezin and be the talk of the town, so that's why he just decided to do it on his own, quietly. But it's not because he wanted to do it l'chadchila, and therefore when he comes up with the money, he's able to go to Shimon and get his property back. And lastly, in regards to a shuma, a property that's taken away for a debt that's owed, me'emas achal peri, so from when does he get to eat the peiros, the produce of the land? Again, Shimon's going to be taking away a property from Reuven, and that means that he has rights to the fruit of the land, so when in actuality is he allowed to take those peiros? We have three different opinions. Rabbah Rabba says, michimati adrachta l'yodei, from the moment that adrachta comes to him, the adrachta is the document that Bezin gives Shimon, saying you're allowed to take away any property from Reuven for your debt. So even though he hadn't yet taken the property, already from then, from the moment that he gets the paper, the drachta, he's allowed to eat the peiros. Abayom Rabayu says, even beforehand, Edim, when they sign on the paper, that already creates this chiyah, the acquisition for Shimon, and even though he doesn't have the paper, he's able to get peiros. Whereas Rav Amar Rava says it's way later on. It's from when the days of the auction finish. Even if Shimon has the paper, he still can't practically take the land. He first has to go find a piece of land, and then Bezin makes an auction, and there's a whole waiting period, so it takes a lot of time till he actually gets the land, so it's only once the achraza, the auction, is finished, then he's allowed to get the peiros. And moving on to the Mishnah, a person rented a cow from his friend, so he's paying for it, and then he lent it to somebody else, and when it was by the borrower, it died like regular, and a borrower is chayv to pay for that. However, the renter would not be chayv to pay for that. So what happens here? The soicher, the renter, swears to the owner that it died like regular, and he's pater, and the shayl, the borrower, he has to pay. pay to the soicher, to the renter. Because again, as we just said, a shayl is not pater for something like this. Now, Rabbi Yisrael basically says, how could that be? How could this person do business with his friend's cow? It turns out that the renter is doing business with the other guy's cow. The cow has to be returned to the original owner, and this type of shtick doesn't work. The Gemara tells us, how does a soicher acquire this cow? Bishvua, with a shvua that he made, that it died kedarka. Well, the name of the masker the soicher, why doesn't the masker tell the soicher, the one that owns the cow, should tell the one that rented it, I'm putting you and your shvua to the side, and I'm going to work out the din with the shayl. This is a question in Tanakama, meaning according to Tanakama, that the soicher is able to swear that it died kedarka, and the shayl has to pay the soicher, effectively meaning that the soicher gets the cow at the end of the day, and the owner of the cow doesn't get anything. Why doesn't the owner of the cow just tell the soicher, I'm not interested in your shvua, I don't want to hear from you, I'm just going to go to the shayl and he's going to pay me my cow. Ramalei Abaye responded, do you really think that the soicher is kind of the cow with a shvua? He automatically acquires the cow when it dies, which basically means his tour of paying for the cow comes the moment that it dies. And the only reason why he's making a shvua that it died kedarka is just to ease the Baal Abayis that he wasn't negligent with it and that nothing out of the ordinary happened. And therefore the shvua is not something the Baal Abayis could be meichel on or say, I'm not interested in your shvua. And that's according to the Tanakama, the soicher is the one that walks away with the cow at the end of the day. Now, based off of the Mishnah, Amar of Zer of Zer says the following. We can have a situation where the owner of the cow would have to pay a number of cows to the renter, which seems counterintuitive, but based off the Tanakama's opinion of the Mishnah, here's the case. Hey, Chidami, what's the situation? So, Agamene Mea Yaimi, a fellow rented the cow from the owner for 100 days. Vahadar Shaili Mine Tishin Yaimi. And then the owner went to the renter and said, can I borrow the cow from you for 90 days? So he lent it to him for 90 days, which means at the end of the 90 days, there's still 10 days that the renter is going to be able to use the cow. And then, Hadar Agamene Tamnin Yaimi, the renter went back to the owner and said, I actually really need the cow. I would like to rent it from you again for a brand new rental contract for 80 days. And then Vahadar Shaili Mine Shivin Yaimi, the owner went back to the renter and said, you know what? I really need the cow. Can I please borrow it for 70 days? So here we have the same fellow renting the same cow twice, and each rental contract basically is for 10 days. And then we have two borrowings of the same cow. And then what happened? While the cow was still being borrowed by the original owner from the renter, it died. And as we said in Mishnah, a shayl, a borrower, is not potter if the thing dies. So he would have to pay for that. And that means that the owner of the cow has to pay the renter because he had borrowed it from the renter. And so he's chayv for this borrowed cow that died. And how much is he chayv? For every single borrowing, he's chayv a cow. And since he borrowed it twice, so he's chayv two cows. And right now in the Havamina, this is just like the Mishnah. We have somebody that rented a cow and then lent it to somebody else. And over here, we have the renter, which rented a cow, and then he lent it. Now, even though he lent it to the original owner, we're considering it like lending it to somebody else. And when this happens twice, it's as if the cow was lent twice to somebody else, and those borrowers have to pay for the cow. Now, it happens to be that those borrowers are the same person, but it doesn't make a difference. They have to pay for the two cows that they borrowed. However, Amalei Racham Difti Larvina, Racham Difti Asra Vina, Mechti, let's see. Chadaparahi. We're talking about one cow over here. I love Apka. It's going in and it's going out. Apka mischiris va'ayla she'ela. It went from schiris and it went to she'ela. Apka mischiela va'ayla schiris. And then it went from she'ela to schiris. So how can you say that the borrower, who's really the owner of the cow, has to pay twice? We're just talking about one cow over here that's being transferred back and forth. However, Amalei, he responded, is the cow actually here that he's able to tell him this? If the cow was here and it was alive and it hadn't died, so the shayl is technically able to tell the soicher, here, take the cow and use it for however long your rental contract was. But the cow is not here anymore, it's dead, so the whole picture changes. And Ma'aravashi agrees with Rav Acha that we're not talking about a claim of two cows. The only discussion over here is in regards to two cows, meaning what? One, because of the borrowing, meaning the last time that the borrower slash owner borrowed the cow and it died. So technically, the renter has a claim. You borrowed a cow from me, and so you have to give me back that cow. And one is for the schiros, for the rental. Meaning the fact that the guy rented the cow, and even after all the borrowing was over, meaning if the cow wouldn't have died, there still would have been 20 days that he'd be able to use it. And shum she'ela achasi, all the borrowing that was done is just regarded as one thing. And shum schiros achasi, all the renting that was done is also regarded only as one thing. Meaning it's not viewed as two separate transactions, it being rented, then borrowed. And that's not two separate transactions. That all fits under one transaction, one renting and one borrowing. And so bottom line, the borrower, who's really the owner, has to pay the renter two cows. Dish'ela kani lagamri, the renter acquires one completely because that's like the one that he had lent out. Whereas the schiras, the other cow that's being used as the rental cow, avad bayame schirusa, the renter uses it for the rest of his schiras period, and then he has to return it to the original owner. We're going to stop here for the day and pick up tomorrow, continue to talk about a renter and a borrower and what chiyuvim they would have if they make a false shvua. For now, everyone should have a wonderful day.